Well, as Leslie said, my name's Robin. I'm one of the pastors here. And if we haven't yet met, I'd love to meet you, hang out in the atrium, and just introduce yourself. And I'd just love to get to know you. I love to eat. I'm a foodie. Any other foodies here? Love to eat. Yes. It's hard to find somebody who doesn't like to eat. Does your family have a favorite sort of meal that when you gather to celebrate, that's the meal, or that's the dish? You know, the dish that says this day, this event, this person is really special. Maybe it's a dish that recalls memories of home. Maybe it's a dish that reminds you of the history of your people or the independence of a nation. A dish that is more than just a dish, more than just the recipe. Steve's mom happens to make an amazing carrot cake. And it's a family favorite, and we can't ever gather without the carrot cake. It's not a family gathering without the carrot cake. She always makes it in a bundt pan, and it's always served on the same plate. It's like, that's the carrot cake plate. It's sort of the centerpiece of the meal, and the recipe's been passed down to anybody who wants it. Not only is she skilled at making a fabulous carrot cake, she's also incredibly skilled at cutting the thinnest slice imaginable. And I'm not even exaggerating. I'm not kidding. It's quite a skill to see that cake curl over the edge of the knife without breaking. And she can make one bundt pan cake serve 20 people with half of it left over. Not kidding. You can check with Steve on that. And it's not that she's stingy. She's really, really generous. She just cares about the amount of sugar we consume. And she abhors waste. So you can come back for as many slices as you want. Just, you can't take it all at one time. And that carrot cake has become more than just a cake. It actually represents shared memories, shared laughter around her slices, and it's now been memorialized in a phrase, in an expression. When someone in the family says, "I'll just have a grandma slice," we all know what that means. It's insider language for just enough to taste, but not enough to waste. And there's this distinct, deep human instinct, I think, in all of us through cultures and civilizations to mark significant moments with food, with special meals. Because sharing a meal binds people together, doesn't it? As family, as friends, as community. And shared meals have always been more than just about the food. Because when people sit down at a table, at the same table, something deeper happens. Because meals say things that words never can quite. Across every culture, every generation, meals carry meaning far deeper than the calories and the recipes and the plates that they're served on. They're symbols of a shared life. They tell a story. They say something. But more than that, they do something. They do something in us. Something mysterious happens when people break bread together, when families bond and barriers soften and strangers become friends and friendships deepen. Communities are formed around food, around a meal. Because when we share a meal, we are not just consuming food. We're participating in a story. We're stepping into some kind of shared identity, whatever it is that's brought us around that table together. And over time, those meals or those coffees on a Tuesday with that friend begin to shape us and change us until who we are becomes somewhat inseparable from the table that we gather around. We become a people defined by the meal we share, the carrot cake in the bundt pan on the special plate. And all great Jewish feasts function like this. And we talk a lot about Jewish feasts and festivals in the Old Testament and the Hebrew scriptures because Jesus was Jewish. He was Hebrew, and it matters. That was his culture. That's what informed the way he thought and his worldview. And all Jewish feasts represent an event. They are a promise or an identity. We are who we are as those who share in this particular meal, this bread and this juice. And if you're just joining us, we're on this journey through Lent. And it's an annual passage of time where we sit in the ashes of a broken world. and maybe in the ashes of our own lives. When life hasn't turned out as we planned, when the world is not as God intends it to be, when everything's not tied up with a neat, tidy, cute bow, where there isn't a rainbow at the end of every storm, rather just, you know, muddy puddles and soggy socks. And the pain doesn't always lead to progress, and the tragedy doesn't always lead to triumph. Lent gives us permission to tell the truth about how life really is. And that may be the world you find yourself in this morning. And Lent is a season that honors that, that says it's okay to sit in the ashes, to weep, to lament, to rail against God if need be. It's also a time when we're reminded that God's way to new life is through death, not domination. God's way to abundance is actually through generosity, and God's way to fullness is through emptying ourselves. Now, admittedly, that's a terrible marketing strategy, because we know how this story goes, don't we? We know that Jesus wasn't out to win fans, but flip tables and make enemies. He didn't suck up to power, rather he exposed it, and it cost him his life. And yet his death, somehow, mysteriously, through his death, we have life. But that's getting ahead. As we inhabit the events of Jesus last week, his final trek to Jerusalem, that death march towards the cross, we're invited to become participants in the story. Not just objective onlookers. We're invited into the story, walking with the witnesses, sitting with the spectators, listening with the bystanders, and today, eating with the accomplices. Today, we're in the upper room. We're gathered around an ancient table, sharing Jesus' last meal on earth in the shadows of death that's closing in. That's the context of where we are today in the story, in this journey to the cross. It's Thursday evening. It's the eve of the crucifixion. It's the eve of Jesus' betrayal and arrest. It's the evening of Jesus' last meal, but the first meal of a new future. You see, this meal, this table, is at the intersection of history. It's literally BC and AD, or BCE and CE, however you use. This table sits right at the intersection of that. And the 11, there's not 12 anymore, there's 11. Judas has gone off to do his dirty deed and hand Jesus over to the religious establishment. So there's the 11, and they're gathered secretly in this upper room. And here's what we read. This is how Matthew tells the story in Matthew chapter 26, starting at verse 26. While they were eating, Jesus took bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it and gave it to his disciples, saying, "Take and eat. This is my body." Then he took a cup, and when he had given thanks, he gave it to them, saying, "Drink from it, all of you. This is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins. I tell you, I will not drink from this fruit of the vine from now on until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom." That's when creation is redeemed. And when they had sung a hymn, they went out to the Mount of Olives. This table that we practice here at Lakeside every month, this communion, the Lord's table, Eucharist, was like that one. It's more than food. It's more than a meal. It's more than bread and juice. This table has a long memory. And the story reaches back thousands of years before Jesus walked the dusty roads of Judea, before, long before the cross, long before the church was ever established. There was already a meal pregnant with meaning and rich with memory and heavy with story and alive with hope and expectation and anticipation. It was a table of freedom. That's where this table comes from. For generations, Jewish people had gathered around that table, the table that the disciples were gathered around on this Thursday evening, remembering the night that God brought them out of slavery, the night when deliverance came, the night the night that death passed over them. It wasn't just the dinner they ate. It was an identity they inhabited. They were people shaped by that meal, that experience, that event. They were people of the Passover. It was their shared story. It was their identity. And so here they are at this meal again with great expectation. And then Jesus takes the bread and the cup, and he utterly transforms it. With the bread and the cup, he takes a meal that has defined his people for centuries, and he redefines it. It's what Jesus does everywhere he went, whoever he encountered. He redefined, he transformed their lives, their loves, their losses. And Jesus still does that. Jesus longs to do that for us, to transform our situation, to transform who we are, to grasp the magnitude of his words. We go back thousands of years to that first Passover meal. On the eve of the Hebrews, that's Jesus' ancestors, on the eve of their escape from Egypt, you may remember God had tasked Moses, said, go and confront the Pharaoh of Egypt. Now we read that, we're used to it. We've seen it on the big screen. It's kind of like, blah, blah, whatever, yeah. Go back and confront this Pharaoh, the most powerful man living, the man with an army, the man with gallows at his disposal, a man who wasn't opposed to ruthless violence and killing children. You go to that man and you demand that he let your people go, just like that. Do that. No leader of any economic superpower would compromise the national treasury and anger the elites, the billionaire class, by liberating the cheap labor force, right? It just doesn't make sense. Not when you're the one with the power. They're the ones who propped up the economy. They're the ones who built Egypt to be the empire it was. This would rock their entire economic system. The oligarchs would revolt. So it's a no-brainer. Pharaoh's gonna say no. And in the ancient story, plagues were sent to try and convince Pharaoh that Moses meant business, that God wanted people to be free. But he's unmoved. Finally, he's warned. An angel of death is gonna come and take the firstborn from every family if you don't let these people go. The Hebrews themselves weren't even exempt from this. They were instructed to pack up, be ready to leave, have your shoes on your feet, and then eat this final meal in Egypt. And at the center of this meal was bread with no yeast, no time to let it rise. Bread with no yeast, it was more like a cracker. Bitter herbs to remind them of the bitterness that they endured in slavery. Roasted lamb. But before they ate that roasted lamb, before they even roasted it, they were to take some of the blood and they were to paint it on the doorposts of the house so that the angel of death would see that blood and pass over. You see, without the blood of the lamb, there was no escaping death. No matter if you were Egyptian or Hebrew, no escaping death without the blood of the lamb. Every element of that Passover meal meant something. Nothing was accidental on that table. Nothing was there just for the taste. Every bite told a story. God had instructed the people to eat this meal every year, year after year, generation after generation. Why? So that they would never forget. They would never forget the night that God stepped into their oppression, the night when their chains were broken, the night when freedom began. And in their eating, they were remembering. They were actually enacting and reliving that experience. And this was the meal that reminded them that God liberated us. Centuries passed after that first Passover meal, and empire after empire rose to power. Empire after empire conquered them and oppressed them and occupied them and impoverished them. And again, God's people were found themselves living under someone else's rule, some other empire's boot. And so this Passover meal evolved from just simply a remembrance. It wasn't just now a meal of memory, it was a meal of hope. Every year they looked back, remembering the night that God freed them from slavery. They also looked forward, longing for the day when God would do it again, because God had promised a deliverer who would come who'd be greater than Moses. They called that person, whoever they would be, a Messiah, a deliverer, a king that would come and set everything right. That was their expectation. Every time they gathered around that Passover meal, they looked back. Yes, God did it. And they looked forward. Yes, God's going to do it again. And so this meal became more than a remembrance. It became anticipation, which meant the Passover was never just a quiet religious ritual. It was deeply political. Because every year, under the watchful eye of whichever empire it was that was ruling, Hebrew families would gather around tables and declare something dangerous, armed with bread in one hand and a cup in the other. They were declaring, no matter how things might look, no matter who sits on the throne, no matter whose flag flies over our city, no matter whose soldiers march in our streets, we belong to God. And one day, we will be free. That was the context of this meal. You can imagine the emotion in that meal. This meal was about freedom. Do you see how powerful it was? You see how it formed a people? Food was both instruction and symbol and identity and hope. And every Passover meal, every Passover table was more than memory. It was a promise. God is going to do this. I know it. We know it. That the God who liberated us once isn't finished liberating us. And so there they are in that upper room, gathered covertly, renewing hope, aware of the stakes, aware that Judas is no longer with them. He's off doing his dirty deed. He's about to betray Jesus, and their spidey senses are on full alert. And Matthew says this, while they were eating. Now, they knew every piece of food on that table. They knew what it represented, the bitter herbs, the bread, the cup, each one pointing backward, back to Egypt, back to deliverance, back to the God who frees his people. They knew it by heart. But this night, this meal is different. Because sitting at the center of the table is the one that the whole story has been pointing towards. At some point in the meal, Jesus reaches for the bread. The disciples know what he's going to say. They know it off heart. They know the liturgy. They know the prayers. They know the instruction and the explanation. They've been doing this since they were kids. Instead, Jesus says something that no one had ever heard. He said, "Take and eat. This is my body." What? That's not part of the script. And then he took a cup saying, "Drink from it, all of you. This is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins." This was a mic drop moment. It was so jarring. We can't even begin to imagine the shockwaves that would have gone through that room, the furtive glances and the furrowed eyebrows and the confused looks. For us, it'd be like telling the Christmas story, but replacing Jesus with someone else, like Santa, I don't know. Or like when Chantal Kreviziak, I probably messed up her name, changed the words to the anthem. Do you remember that? At the Four Nations hockey tournament. We're just so used to the anthem. We hear it. We probably don't even think about the words we're saying. And all of a sudden, somebody changes the words. And what just happened? It's like someone claiming to be the Messiah. When that happens, we call it a cult. So he takes this meal that's been defined by the people, that had defined the people of God over thousands of years, and he places himself at the center of it, as if to say, that deliverance that you've been remembering, it was just a foretaste. It was just an appy of what's to come. That freedom that you've been longing for, it's arriving through me. And we know they won't really recognize it for a while. That covenant that God made with our ancestors, tonight I'm renewing it. But I'm doing more than that. I'm expanding it. The bread is no longer just about the Exodus, and the cup isn't just about Egypt. It's not just freedom for you, but freedom for the world. It's not just freedom from the domination of a Pharaoh, but freedom from the domination of the sin that creates pharaohs and Caesars and despots. It's not just rescue from a death-dealing empire. It's rescue from death itself. Jesus is taking this evocative meal loaded with powerful imagery that held history and memory and identity, a meal about God's great act of liberation for them, and he changes it. You know, for them, first he says he's going to die, which they can't bend their heads around, and now this. I can't even imagine how they're processing this. It's not like changing the Christmas menu from like, you know, turnip instead of sweet potato. Blah. Don't know why anyone would do that. It's like changing the whole meaning of Christmas. Why would Jesus do this? Why wouldn't he just start a new ritual, a new meal? And this is the important bit. He's taking the power and the meaning of Passover that they understood at a visceral level. It was part of the fiber of their being. That God came through for them. God rescued them. God remembered them. God delivered them. And he's taking that to a whole new level. He's expanding the scope of their imagination and inclusion. He's saying, that was just the beginning. You wait till see. Wait to see what God is up to. Wait till you see the vision that God has for creation. This is my body, my whole self, and I give it freely to a violent death for you. This isn't God demanding Jesus' life for ours. This is God in Jesus, on the cross, giving God's self for us. If you want to know what God looks like, just look at Jesus on the cross. And then he says, this is my blood of the covenant, the promise. It's not lamb's blood. It's my blood, the Creator's own blood for you. Now, in the Bronze Age, covenants were sealed, promises were sealed, often with the blood of an animal. It's just how it was in the Bronze Age. That's how the ancients related to the divine, to their gods. And in the case of the covenant that God made with Moses, where the people, you know, promised their undying love and loyalty and all that, Moses took some of the blood and he threw it on the people to seal the deal. It kind of makes you glad we're not in the Bronze Age. I mean, for other reasons, there's no toilet paper and running water. It's like camping all the time. But that was the Bronze Age. That's how they sealed a contract, a covenant. This isn't God demanding Jesus' blood for ours. This is God in Jesus on the cross, giving God's self for us. Do you want to know what God looks like? Just look at Jesus on the cross. Let that undo any assumptions that you might have about God, any fears you might have about God, any maybe disdain you might have for God. Jesus on the cross is the best picture we have of God's heart. Jesus is saying that covenant sealed with the blood of the Lamb was for a people. This covenant I'm making with you, sealing with my blood, is for the world. That Passover story, it was just the beginning. I'm fulfilling that promise. And like Passover, I'm giving you a meal with which to remember. Not a theory, not a dogma, but something to eat. He's saying the significance of my death and future resurrection is so huge, so unimaginable, you need to eat it. You need to drink it, not just think about it or debate it, which we love to do, or explain it. Eat it. It needs to become part of you, involve the whole of you, body, mind, spirit. We're transformed by what we eat and by who we eat with. Let this bread and this cup form and transform you. This was the last meal Jesus ate. And it's the first meal of the new covenant, the new people. Passover created a new nation, but the Lord's table creates a new people. This is the meal of the church, the meal of the people gathered for the sake of the world. And this meal says, a new day is here, a day of freedom and liberation. A new people are being formed and reformed and transformed every time we eat this meal together. The Passover, the Lord's table, they're both feasts of liberation, both feasts forged in the shadow of empire under the boot of oppression. Both feasts were meals of remembrance and hope. Passover for the sake of a nation, the Lord's table for the sake of the world. That's what we're doing. But just like Passover, this table, this communion table, points in two directions. It looks back to the cross, to where freedom was won, where the enemy was conquered. And it looks forward to the day when the story is finally complete and God restores all things. When life is as God intends it and creation is in harmony. It's what we do when we gather around this table. We're looking back, yes, but we're looking forward. This is a promise. We get to eat this promise, claim this promise, live from the place of this promise. And so when we come to this table, we're stepping into something ancient, something sacred, a story of liberation, a promise of redemption, and an unshakable declaration. We belong to God. And because of Jesus, we can be free. We can be free. Jesus, we thank you for the cross. We thank you for your love for us. We thank you for this table, this simple bread and simple juice that we get to eat and take into ourselves, not just as remembrance, but as promise of hope, of anticipation that you are indeed at work, that you are not finished, that your desire is liberation. So we claim that today. We claim that today. We pray all of that in your name. Amen. Jeff and Jen and Michael are just going to sing over us as we come forward for the elements today. I'm going to invite you, come, all who are weary, anyone here who's carrying heavy burdens that are too heavy to bear, all who long for mercy, a fresh start, a second chance, because at this table, our mistakes and our woundedness don't name us. Christ does. We're God's beloved. We're not our past. We're becoming something new. For even now, God is doing a new thing, friends, among us here, in our lives individually. He's doing something now. For even now, God is doing something new. This table promises us that. It's doing something new in each one of us and in the church as the people gathered for the sake of the world around this table. So you're invited. Come. You can come to the table closest to you if that's really lined up. You can find a table where there is no line. Everything is gluten-free. If you can't get up, please raise your hand. Someone would be happy to bring you the elements. Then I invite you to take them back to your seat and just wait, and we will all eat and drink together. And just let the words of this song soak. Just soak in the words of this song. And consider, where do you need to be free? Is there something that's holding you in bondage? This bread and this juice is a declaration of freedom. Where do you long for freedom in your life?
You were betrayed. You took bread and you gave thanks. And then you said, this is me broken for you. In the same way you took the cup, your new covenant of love, and you said, this is me poured out for you. This is me poured out for you. What a saving grace, what a gift of love. This is how we remember. This is how we remember you. What a price you paid, gave it all for us. This is how we remember. This is how we remember you. At the table once again, open hearts and open hands, and we will taste and see that you are good. And every time that we receive, we announce your victory. We proclaim your death and life till you return. What a saving grace, what a gift of love. This is how we remember. This is how we remember you. What a price you paid, gave it all for us. This is how we remember. This is how we remember you. We won't forget. How could you have been? We see it again at the table, at the table of the Lord. We won't forget. How could you have been? We see it again at the table of the Lord. Oh, at your table. We come to the table. We won't forget. How could you have been? We see it again at the table of the Lord. We won't forget. How could you have been? We see it again at the table of the Lord.
On the night he prayed, Jesus took the bread and he blessed it and he broke it. He said, this is my body broken for you. Take, eat, and remember me. So let's eat together, friends. And then he took the cup and he said, this is the cup of the new covenant, the promise that God is making all things new. God wants to make each one of us new, and God is redeeming the world. I kind of added to those words, but took the cup and he said, this is the cup of the new covenant. Drink all of it. So let's drink together. Matthew closes this part of the story with this. When they had sung a hymn, they went out to the Mount of Olives. That's where we're going to pick up next week. And the tension ratchets up. And so in light of that, I've invited, asked Jeff and Jen and Michael if they would just lead us in the chorus of the song that they just sang.
We do invite you to just stand with us as we close out our service. What a saving grace, what a gift of love. You heard it while we were singing, so sing it with us.
What a saving grace, what a gift of love. This is how we remember, this is how we remember you. What a price you paid, gave it all for us. This is how we remember, this is how we remember you. What a saving grace, what a gift of love. This is how we remember, this is how we remember you. What a price you paid, gave it all for us. This is how we remember, this is how we remember. This is how we remember, this is how we remember you.
Just a reminder that our prayer teams are here at the front, as they are every week. If something stirred within you today, if you are carrying something heavy and you just want someone to pray for you, if you want to know more about following Jesus, they'd be happy to talk to you about that and to pray with you. So would I, so would Brian, one of our pastors, will be out in the atrium. Just love to close us with a benediction, but before I do, just a reminder that if you'd like to go to the Storm game tonight, very Canadian weather, very Canadian game. This is one of our gatherings here at Lakeside, and you can meet Chris at the guest services. We have special price tickets, and we'll be going, those of us who are able to go together and sit together as Lakeside. And so if you're interested in that, it's not too late. You can grab tickets from Chris. Let me bless us as we go. Let us go now as the church, the people of bread and cup, of remembrance and anticipation, to be the healing presence of Christ to a hurting world. Go in peace, friends.
Thanks for spending time with us today. If this message was helpful to you, please consider passing it on, giving it a like, or supporting our work so we can continue to provide more great content. And if you're looking for a church to call home, whether in person or online, we'd love to connect. Head to lakesidechurch.ca to find out how you can get involved. Thanks again for being with us. We'll see you next time.